Hello, I'm Amanda McNulty with Clemson Extension and Making It Grow, and this is a Making It Grow Extra podcast. I'm with John Nelson, retired from being the curator of the A.C. Moore Herbarium at the University of South Carolina, a remarkable part of that university's legacy, and a field botany teacher. And now he's sitting here helping me learn a little bit about one of the features that we enjoy so much in our state, Carolina Bays. And if you want to learn more about Carolina Bays, this is our third podcast. So go back and listen to the first one and the second one. And
that's
then
right.
Come back for this one. Because, John, we've gotten past the point where we've talked a little bit about the origin of them, and we've talked about the clay-based and the peat-based.
And the distribution.
Distribution, thank you. And we were talking about if there's a fire that goes through a peat-based one and a hole burns in the peat, what happens?
Well, different things can happen. So I guess we're still, concentrating on these bays in South Carolina that are called peat-based bays.
And
most of them are toward Myrtle Beach or Conway in the PD region of the state.
Okay.
And I have to say that, and I think you've been there, one of the best examples of any complex of Carolina bays you could ever hope to visit is at a heritage preserve called Lewis Ocean Bay. And it's wonderful.
And I stumbled upon it. I was at a conference and just looked up places to go, and it was remarkably exciting.
And it's been a while since I've been there, but I remember one of the most interesting things about Lewis Ocean Bay was that there are several places where you can actually see populations of Venus flytrap.
Oh.
And they're just the most remarkable plants on the face of the earth, I think.
And when I was there, I remember seeing sundews, another carnivorous plant.
That's right. Sundews, and there are other kinds of carnivorous plants that are commonly associated with Carolina bays, and especially these peat-based bays. So we could talk a little bit about them.
Okay.
And I bet you would have seen different species of pitcher plants, which is Sarracenia.
Yes.
And the most common one is, of course, the yellow pitcher plant. But at Lewis Ocean Bay, there's also the red pitcher plant and also the purple pitcher plant. And you kind of start wondering, what about all these carnivorous plants in a place like that?
Uh-huh.
How come? Well, there's another podcast if we're going to be talking about the distribution of carnivorous plants in nature in South Carolina. But a combination of features within some of these peat-based Carolina bays makes insectivorous plants a perfect habitat for them.
And insectivorous plants, as I understand it, are particularly getting nitrogen from the dissolved bodies of those little invertebrates that
correct
there.
They get all sorts of goodies from the little insect corpses that they harvest in whatever
the
fashion.
pH of the soil and water around them is just makes it very difficult to take up nitrogen, apparently, or for nitrogen to be converted to a plant assimilated form can use.
The plant biochemists will tell us that the pH of much of the soil and water, if it is particularly wet, will be too low, that is too acidic for proper accumulation of nitrogen from the soil.
So imagine getting them from those little insects. Isn't that just remarkable, insect body having enough nitrogen?
It's fantastic. And the ways that these different plant genera have evolved for basically doing the same thing, only in very different ways.
Yeah.
So we haven't even mentioned bladderworts that are commonly either in wet soil or submersed in water. Just fascinating. I got to say, though, that this business of having these insectivorous plants in a wet place can be associated with a burned out area of a of a Carolina Bay that's now filled with water.
Okay.
At least for a substantial amount of time.
And so you said some of them are called pond bays? Is that?
Well, it would be an open water pond within a Carolina Bay.
Oh.
And characteristic plant species that are aquatic would be inside these, of course, or making it part of the vegetation, including water lilies and water shield.
Yes.
Just gorgeous plants.
Beautiful.
Especially if you're able to get into a kayak to see these.
I was going to ask you, are some of the ponds large enough that you actually, I mean, it's not just 10 feet. I mean, some of them
I mean, hundreds of acres.
Whoa.
Well, I'm thinking now of a place called, like, Woods Bay,
which
isn't exactly a Pocosin-dominated bay,
but
has plenty of Pocosin species
and
many of these insectivorous plants as well. Another one that was a favorite of mine whenever we would see it. Would be the sacred lotus that we'd see in the some
sacred
of these
lotus. Mm-hmm. We
beautiful.
Have lotus.
Oh yeah.
Really, I have to. I feel like I need to leave you here and go look it up real quick. As soon as we finish, I'm going to go look it up.
Uh huh. Anyway, these bays are not just gardens of delight, but they can be fantastic places for a zoologist to go and study critters. And you might imagine that a place that is wet for only a part time of the year, that is wet for a while and then dry for a while, might have some pretty interesting interactions going on with different kinds of animals.
And that's typical of these when we went back to talking about Pocosins and all that, wet and dry.
So this kind of variable wet or dry kind of habitat can be very important for different kinds of amphibians and reptiles.
Really?
Especially amphibians that are going to start their life cycle in a wet place.
Yeah.
And then when the water's gone, they've had to metamorphose into another life form.
So, like our little tadpoles and all.
Yeah, right, or salamanders. So these can be extremely important breeding sites for herps, that is, reptiles and amphibians.
Wow.
It's another reason for their protection. And let me just jump around and say one more thing about, we were talking about their distribution earlier, and I told you before the podcast started that there were thousands of these things on the landscape, and sadly, only a scarce handful are in any
protected
status. Before protection, in any kind of situation that looks like a natural condition.
Oh, unaltered.
Unaltered. Oh. There are probably no bays that have been unaltered.
Oh, because we were a farming state.
That's right.
And they were in the coastal plain. Well, they were going to try to drain them.
That's
so
right.
Grow crops
and a lot of the ones that never did get drained were just too wet and too hard to get into. But
they just gave up. Thank God. Yeah.
Well, even the ones that are out there, and in pretty good shape, if you go into them, you're eventually going to probably find a ditch or two that may not have been very effective in turning it away from being a wetland into a an agricultural asset. When I did work for the Wildlife Department and we were doing a Carolina Bay survey back in the 80s, just as I said, a fraction of what we could see from aerial photography was even worthy of a field visit. And then of those, there was just a fraction that were worthy of being turned into any kind of protection project.
Well, and you're talking about some of the most important agricultural lands when you were talking about ORI and PD, I mean, the Florence and all those places. So I guess, I mean, people were trying to make a living, and that's what happened. We didn't know to be so careful.
Yeah. But the wonderful thing is that we have been, the various efforts of the entities in this state that have been looking out for the welfare of biodiversity have come up with some remarkable happy places, shall we say them. That is, bays that have been protected.
Well, and when we were first talking, we talked about a gentleman in Camden who brought a lot of the interest two Carolina Bays, Henry Savage.
That's right.
And there's one named for him in Kershaw County, I believe.
And it's a fantastic place. It's a very easy place to get to and an easy walk. There's a walkway that leads to the bay.
And filled with pond cypress.
Pond cypress.
Oh, just so beautiful.
We call that particular kind of habitat a pond cypress pond.
Oh.
It's sort of a mouthful.
Uh-huh.
But pond cypress is a little bit different from the cypress that we see associated with large river systems. So that if you go to the Congaree National Park, the cypress that you're seeing there is called bald cypress.
Yes.
And pond cypress is restricted to isolated wetlands generally, such as Carolina Bays. And one other thing about Savage Bay, if you're ever lucky enough to go there, you need to look at a map showing its how it's put together. It's actually two Carolina Bays that have been seemingly jammed together.
So we consider it a Carolina Bay.
It is. It's,
okay.
It's basically two Carolina Bays. It's got sort of a Valentine shape.
How lovely. Well, and I'm glad that it honors someone who brought that to mind, and you reminded us that his book on them, although some of the ideas have not been substantiated with modern techniques, still has very important and fascinating information.
And perhaps the best thing about Henry Savage was that he got so many people interested in that part of biodiversity in this state.
Which probably has something to do with the fact that we have the ones we do have protected. Once you tell somebody about something and they go and see how beautiful it is, then they can get excited about
That's
it.
Right. You've got to start a fire somehow.
Yes, you do. Okay. So so when we talked about the peat bays and some of them get ponds in them, that's a specialized type of peat-based bay.
It's a peat-based bay with a special habitat.
Okay.
And so
okay.
I don't want people to get the idea that all peat-based bays have a pond or a body of water inside, even during the wet season. But we got to remember that these places, even if there is a pond, it's probably going to dry out sooner or later. And then be refilled with water when the rainy season comes.
Isn't that so? There's just, and because of that, different animals, different plants can use it in different ways.
And in different
times of
the year.
Just adds to the biodiversity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
it's not always the same. Yeah.
And again, I think that one of the fun aspects of doing inventory with these places is that you could go from a very, very dry place to a very, very wet place. You could be up to your waist in water, with only taking a few short steps.
And fire is potentially going to be there with a lot of them at certain times. Again,
hopefully.
Yeah.
I mean, if from the standpoint of a natural system, fire would happen during the fire season. That is, whenever there was thunderstorm kind of activity, presumably would have been summer burns.
And again, many of the plants were plants that caught on fire quickly and burned quickly and could survive fire, which is wonderful.
And could re-sprout.
Regenerate.
And if there were any interlopers that had moved in and weren't.
Get rid of those.
Good way to get rid of those guys.
Okay. Thank goodness for fire. John, thank you so much. Let's look forward to talking some more about the fascinating lives of Carolina Bays.
Or something else, maybe.